just tuning in to us, we're doing a live webcast and simultaneously recording this for a podcast. The article comes to us from the Gospel Coalition blog. It's 2014, February. I'm not sure.
10th,
yeah. And then 9 things you should know about marriage in America. And it's got some great statistics in here. I guess the first question I want to ask the group is, should the church be concerned about the number of couples dating in the congregation, the number of people getting married? If you're in a church and you don't see this happening, should that be a concern to you? That's the group question. Should that be a concern to you? You're in a church, we have people listening all over the world, and people aren't dating in that church, and people aren't getting married in that church.
Well, you're not going to have children to carry on the faith. So that's a major problem, not to mention tithe to fund the church just being...
But I'm in a church, Joey, and I just don't see people dating.
I'm going to say yes. Based on this, it's going to be come across as very judgmental. I think it's selfish.
What is selfish, John?
The trend of not getting married. I think it's based on, I'm looking out, you know, I want to have everything for me. I need the perfect wife. I need the perfect job. I need a certain income before I'm going to invest myself in anyone else. You know, like those little crumb crunchers that take all my life and, you know, change my life forever. You know, and I think that, you know, if you really think about it, you know, who picks up the dirty socks? Well, it's mom. Does the kid? No, the kid has to be told to pick up the dirty socks. And so what we're doing is we're extending that selfish behavior on into later age. And, you know, we're not developing mature people. Well, how did mom become the mature? Because she got married and she had to take care of these little kids now. And she understands, you know, I got to pick up these socks and get this stuff going. And dad has to go to work. And there's responsibilities and there's pressures that weigh on you. And it changes you. It makes you more mature and reliable. And if I had to go in, you know, do a job with somebody, you know, I'd much rather ask a father of 2 or 3 than a teenager to go help me.
I got a video I want you guys to watch with me as part of this article. It's only 2 minutes long, and the listener can find it on the internet, and we'll post the link with this. But hopefully you'll be able to hear it. I'm going to turn the volume up, and I'm going to hit play in just a minute, and you guys check out this with me. This was emailed to me by one of our faithful listeners.
Rescue of a pregnant mother and her 3 young children. Witnesses ran after this minivan as it went into the Atlantic Ocean yesterday at Daytona Beach. And now police and DCF want to know why this happened. Local 6's Shelly Munez is live in Daytona Beach this noon. And Shelly, we understand more agencies are getting involved in this.
That's right, and now we know the Volusia County Sheriff's Office is heading up the investigation. They just released new details about what happened, and it actually started when a lifeguard noticed that van and that mother driving here on the shore, and then they say she deliberately turned into the ocean in about 3 to 4 feet of water. She is right now undergoing mental health evaluation, and the big question is, why did she do this?
My friend pointed out that there was a car getting really close to the beach and actually started driving on the water. And I saw a little kid in the back, like, waving his arms around, like, screaming, help, help us. And then the car kept going deeper.
And thanks to several bystanders and lifeguard, as the van drifted into the deeper waters of Daytona Beach, they were pulling out the family of 4, a mother and her 3 children, a 5, 7, and 10-year-old. This video from an onlooker shows you witnesses opening the trunk, grabbing the children. But as witnesses like Donna Pratt watched in horror, they question, how could this be an accident?
When she first was drifting into the ocean, wow, we thought, oh, you know, maybe an accident. But when the bystanders went to help, she clearly went deeper into the ocean, much deeper into the ocean. She drove right towards it and faster. So it seems hard to believe that that was accidental.
Now here's the good news. The children are all doing okay. They were in the hospital overnight, were just released, and we do know that there were 2 girls, a boy, this included a toddler, and again, mom.
All right, so that's enough. You see what's going on. I mean, this is an indication that we're living in a fallen world. We've got a real hard time with our responsibilities to take care of children. This is insane.
Well, it is, and you know, back to what Pastor Jonathan said, you know, unfortunately there are a lot of young mothers out there that, you know, you're talking about, you know, picking up the socks and all of that, or the fathers or whatever, but I mean, there's a ton of families out there that don't, they don't do that.
You're right. That's
true. I mean,
true.
You walk in their house and they haven't done laundry and they just go buy new clothes because they don't do laundry and it's just piled up everywhere. And
you're not supposed to do that?
They don't do dishes. They're just piled up and they get more paper plates or
paper
whatever.
Plates.
And just, I mean, it's a, and I know where you're coming from and you know, what your maturity level is, but it's not being passed on to our younger generations. They're not maturing, and they're not having children at 20 or 22 or 26, and they're maturing because of it and taking care of their house or taking care of the children, just based on the video and news reports. They're not doing those things.
Right, and that's exactly my argument is, and I think that's part of the issue. This is just take it for what it is. It's just my opinion, but I think that you get released from your parents' care about 18 or 19. You go off into the world. If you're now in the world and you have to fend for yourself, I think there's a different level of effort and work that you have to put in. And then I got this little safety net. I can live with mom and dad till I'm 26, 28, and kind of, mooch off them, do whatever, play video games. Don't really have to go to work every day because... at the end of the day, I'm still going to have food.
Still go home.
Right. Yeah. I think that that just ingrains that selfishness, as opposed to even, I would say, a young mother, 20, maybe a single mother, the amount of time and effort that she has to now put into investing her life into someone else, that young baby, and I'm all by myself, and, she's going that waitressing job. I mean, that is a different level of commitment. I mean, she is, in my opinion, not quite as selfish as someone who is maybe even going to get an extended degree in college and hasn't really had to think about, taking care of herself at all. And I think that what we've got, we see this trend into the 28, 30, 29, before I'm going to get married. I really think that those are like the early 20s or formative years for this stuff to become where I learn a pattern of, what my life is about? It's about taking care of other people.
Yours is.
But yeah, my life should be about taking care of other people. And those other people should be my children, in most cases. And that's my opinion. I'm just saying that's what I think.
Well, the
problem is.
I agree. But I just, my point is we're missing that in each generation. It seems like they're not being taught that. So you do have 20-year-old moms or whatever age. They're not investing themselves into their children. They're just, letting them do whatever, and they're not taking care of them, and, social services is taking them away and putting them in foster homes.
Not in every situation, because there's some young couples in our church who are doing a good job with their children. But I want to say there's exceptions to the rules, because I know someone's going to say, well, I'm the exception to the rule.
All right, let's look at number one. Because there's plenty to talk about as we work through these. Mm-hmm. David, would you share the fact, please?
The median ages of people when they first marry as of 2010 was 28.9 for men and 26.9 for women.
All right, so I'm going to go on the record and say that's way too old. All right, that's just way too old. That you need to be married before you're 29 years old. That there's a problem if you're 29 years old and you're not married. Okay, and that's probably going to offend somebody out there, but we really don't care. I don't know how in the world you hit like puberty, 14, 15, testosterone's out the roof at 17, 18, and then you remain pure, Bill, till you're 29?
Right.
A decade of doing what? Yeah. And no one needs to answer that question. But I mean, you need to get married. I mean, my thought is the church needs to be engaged in these things. Mm-hmm. We need to create a culture in the church where we celebrate marriage.
That's true.
Where we encourage courtship, that we promote marriage, that we're not going, wow, are they really ready? And creating this underculture that discourages people.
You're exactly right.
You're never ready. And I think probably maybe the older you get, maybe the even less ready you are, because the more formed you are and selfish habits. If I'm a 35-year-old guy or a 30-year-old guy and I'm getting married for the first time, since I've moved out of my house at 18 years old, I've had 12 years of forming my own habits, the things that I do. And now I'm going to bring someone else in who's been doing that for 10 years too, And now you really it's going to be tougher, I think, than if you're 18. Sure, being married at 18 isn't easy, but getting married at 28 and 28 isn't easy either.
Well, this whole find yourself idea, I remember, and I know that this is, I am not saying that this is the rule, but my mother was married at 17, my mother-in-law was married at 17, my wife was married at 17. There's nothing mystical about that number, but I had so many people tell my wife and I when we were engaged that she needed to find herself. And if she wasn't careful, she was going to be in her mid-20s and hate what she had done. Yeah, but I think the benefit is that you realize that love is an action. It's a commitment. The reason I'm not going to divorce you is because I made a promise that I wouldn't. It's not because I still feel in love. It's because I chose to love you. And I chose to love you until death. And so this whole idea of how we need to wait until you're older so you can see how you really are, well, that reflects an American parenting problem. If a 17-year-old, 18-year-old, 19-year-old doesn't have some idea of whatever that means, by the way, who they are, that I think that's a problem. It gives a whole another level of credibility that adolescence doesn't deserve. This idea that you're not really a man or a woman until you're 17 or 18 trains them that you have 6 more years of being a brat.
Yeah, yeah. And really, you find your identity in Christ, which is Colossians. You are complete in, we are complete in Him.
Right.
We are complete in Christ. And so I'm not necessarily out there trying to, now am I trying to find what it is I'm supposed to do? You know, but I had a really good idea at 17 years old of the direction that I was supposed to be going. You know, I knew as a senior in high school that I was going to go into the ministry at some point. I had an idea, you know? And so I think this...
Well, I don't think any you men that have daughters, I don't think you want your daughters getting married at 17, but your point, Bill, is that we projected it so far the other direction that we're ended up with these stats, right? Would you bless that right now?
My daughter getting married? Well, thankfully she's not 17, but...
Right.
But it really just
she's
depends.
Close, though, right?
It depends. Yes, it depends on and whether or not I feel like she's mature enough. Of course, you know, at 18, she can pretty much shrug her shoulders and thumb her nose at me. But
sure.
I'm trusting that the relationship I built with her, she's going to seek something that she doesn't legally have to have, which is the blessing of
right.
her father.
Right.
Now, I do want to just point out that we do have young ladies been married at 18 and 19 in this church recently. One of them is helping with a church plant in Boston right now. It was South Boston, whatever it's called.
Yeah,
she was married at 19, right?
Yep.
And so it still happens, and it still produces God-glorifying marriages.
Yeah, I think your point is very well taken, Bill. I mean, we've created 18 or whatever as the magical number because of our... That's when you become an adult, and that's when you can vote and all that.
Yeah,
it's true. John and I were just on the idea that even at 18, you can just thumb your nose at your parents.
Yeah.
And that's crazy.
Right.
You should never thumb your nose at you. Even if your mom and dad's an unbeliever, they have wisdom that you don't have. You should always be seeking their advice.
Right.
I mean, they have something to offer you, you know,
sure.
And it's crazy that the thing you can just thumb your nose at your parents at 18 and not have responsibility.
Right, the glide path on the article, figure one, medium age of first marriage by sex, the glide path is way off. I mean, who knows where it's going to be a few years from now.
Hey, look at 1950. At 1950, yeah. It's 24 for men and 20 and a half for women. That's 60 years ago, and now we're at, you know, 29 and 27. That's quite a jump, especially when you look at it on the graph, and it looks like a plane taking off.
Yeah, we're at
it's also 5 years after World War II.
Yes.
Yeah,
I mean, take into consideration what's going on in our nation and that.
And now the big government, the nanny state from the 30s with Roosevelt has had time to take off.
Well,
too.
It is not to my advantage to get married. I get more benefits from the federal government.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I'm in the process of filing my taxes for the first time as a married man, and I'm sitting here wondering, good night, I got 3 times as much back last year as a single guy. But yet, I didn't lose my salary, but now there's no benefit to being married as far as the government.
Well, you have to start having children, Brian. Once you start having children...
Hey, give me a few more months, all right? We haven't even been married a year.
Oh. Insert joke here. Okay, let's move on.
All right.
Hey, wait, we're live.
Yeah, we sure are. Joey, would you share number 2?
The marriage rate in the United States is currently 31.01%, the lowest it's been in over a century, according to the National Center for Family and Marriage Center at Bowling Green State University. That equals roughly 31 marriages per 1,000 unmarried women. In 1920, the marriage rate reached its peak at 92.3%. Since 1970, the marriage rate has declined by almost 60%. In real terms, the total number of marriages fell from 2.45 million in 90 to 2.11 million in 2010.
So we have a ton of unmarried people out there.
31 marriages per 1,000 unmarried women.
Right.
Think about those numbers.
That's pitiful.
There's just so much you can say about that. I mean, the number of people that are cohabitating because of that pool, let's say.
Yeah, that's one of the points that's coming up.
Definitely. We'll get to that one.
I think I just want to that we don't lose sight of this conversation, that the church, in my view, has a responsibility to promote marriage. That the pastoral staffs and the deacons and the Sunday school teachers and anyone that calls himself a leader needs to be working on creating a culture within the church in which I find my mate here. Courtship is encouraged. Marriage is celebrated. Birth of children is a joyous event, not just for that family, but for the entire body of Christ.
Sure. And we don't need to ostracize guys when things don't work, because you may try once or twice with someone, and we don't need to make it. It didn't work out. Let's be mature about this. Let's not snicker every time they sit together, and then when they're not sitting together, act like teenagers about it.
That's a good point.
I mean, I think that's some of the feedback that I've gotten from singles. What if I date this girl for 6 months and it doesn't work out? I'm afraid the church is going to shun me, and he shouldn't have that fear unless he's an idiot and is a jerk and he's a drunk and he proves it to be all sorts of bad.
And then the next question is, why is he a member of our church if he's an idiot and a drunk and a jerk?
Right, right.
Yeah.
But I think what John was saying in the beginning of the conversation with regard to, there are no perfect spouses out there.
No. Okay, and it's married, and it's over.
Yeah. Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, that was clever.
I'm kidding, honey.
You're not going to find.
She knows.
Yeah, she knows, right. But when we create this culture through so Disney and videos and everything that suggests that, that I need to find my soulmate. How about that term?
Mm. Well, the Jerry Maguire idea, he completes me. Well, no, he's not going to complete you. God's going to complete you when you gaze onto his face for the first time, when you step into his heaven. That's when you will be complete, and you will be completely satisfied, and you will never not be satisfied again. Yeah. Until then, you're going to be dissatisfied.
Well, and on the other end, we've glorified the not just the Disney fairy tale, but we've glorified the Hollywood idea of date as many people as you can. Mm-hmm. And when that doesn't work, toss it away. And when that doesn't work, toss it away. And when that one doesn't work, get a new one. It's how we live our lives. If you don't like that car, get a new one. You don't like that wife, get a new one. Right. And so I talked about this when we went to the ski retreat, but we breed our kids to divorce, because that's how we tell them to date. Get out there and date as many people as you can, and then figure out if you're not looking at marriage, then why are you dating them?
Well, it's interesting you mention that, David. Think about how little we fix. Mm-hmm. You don't fix your mower, you go get a new mower. You don't fix your drill, you go get a new drill. You don't fix your blender. Right, you don't fix your shoes, you go get a new pair of shoes. But 100 years ago, when something broke, it wasn't, let's go buy a new one. It was, how can I fix this? What do I need to do? I need to learn how to fix this. It's going to break. And so there's an implied expectation that I learn how to fix things. Mm-hmm. And your marriage is much like that. It's going to break. You're going to have difficult days. The issue becomes, how can you fix yourself in order to live better in this thing called marriage?
And there's going
to
be weeks when all it feels like it's broke. I mean, sometimes it feels like all you do is fight. Well, there you have weeks like that. I hope I'm not alone in the room. I feel like there's...
You absolutely are.
Thanks. but I mean, and we do have to get them. Another thing is this television. What we see on television is these ideal relationships, this perfect little world where somehow this guy works these long hours as an FBI agent. He comes home to this beautiful wife when the house is clean, and she has this amazing career over here. And I mean, we're feeding them lies, and that's not reality. That's not how it works.
What is number three?
Most people now live together before they marry for the first time. An even higher percentage of divorced persons who subsequently remarry live together first, and a growing number of persons, both young and old, are living together with no plans to marry eventually.
Right. I found out this week that we have a person who attends our church. She's not a member, but she's moved in with somebody. She's moved in with a staff sergeant. And, and she's doing that from a pragmatic perspective. I promise mm-hmm. you that. It's hard for a woman who's trying to live on her own, raise two boys, to make it financially. And if she can just pacify with a sexual favor this dude, she can get lots of benefits. Mm-hmm. The church has to speak to that.
Yep, because the world's going to tell you pragmatic from that perspective. You know, yeah, get to know him first, and then if you'll really find out if you really want to marry him. And I think the big thing that we need to tell people here is, and what women and men need to realize is that women see cohabitation as, okay, we're going to get married.
This is the gateway.
A guy sees cohabitation as a totally different thing.
That's right.
And so, you know, so when you think, ladies, you're moving into that guy, okay, this is the next step towards marriage. No, this is just solving what he needs to get done for the moment.
That's
this,
right. This the is last not marriage thing for on him. His mind may yeah. very well be marriage.
Absolutely. Yeah,
why are you giving him the goods for free? Make him own up. If he wants if he wants the food and he wants the sex, make him put a ring on your finger. Make him take you down to the church and get married.
Yeah, and this is only often thought of as an issue outside the church, but that's just completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Probably we would be shocked if we knew the number of people in our congregation that are not members who are cohabitating. And I say not members because I think we do a good job of investigating the members mm-hmm. through our deliberate process of a membership interview and all that. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of people that are showing up once a month for worship services, and we don't know who they're living with and what they're doing. And if you don't speak to these issues, how do they not? Who's telling them that it's wrong? Do you see it up in Brockton, or is this only in the South?
No, yeah, we see it all the time. A lot of my most faithful people are cohabitating, and I've often gotten their grill and said, that's absolutely wrong. It's sin. And they'll tell me, oh, marriage is just a piece of paper.
Right. Yeah.
So we go round and round about it.
Sure. It's
and sometimes we go round and round about it because they're not saved.
Right.
But sometimes it's because they're barely saved.
Barely saved. I think we have some barely saved folks here, too.
It keeps going to number four. It's the same point, but just to expand on it. It says, unmarried cohabitation, the status of couples who are sexual partners not married to each other and sharing a household is particularly common among the young. It is estimated about a quarter of unmarried women aged 25 to 39 are currently living with a partner, and an additional quarter have lived with a partner at some time in the past. So that's 50% of 25 to 39 that are either living in cohabitation or have lived in cohabitation. More than 60% of first marriages are now preceded by living together, compared to virtually none 50 years ago.
60%.
And it mentioned the idea of a higher percentage of divorced persons when they remarry, they live together first. And I think the stats are, I heard a comedian do a thing on this, and it was really good. And he was kind of an anti-marriage guy, but he said 50% of marriages end in divorce, and 60% of second marriages end in divorce, and 75% of third marriages end in divorce. And he said, that's a learning curve. How are you not paying attention here? This is not working for you.
Right.
You know, you are not successful at this. You know, so there's a problem there.
Well, it also shoots the idea down that if I live with you, I can figure you out.
Yeah.
You're still going to get tired of each other, whether you figure out all his habits before you get married or you figure out all his habits after you get married. You're still going to get tired of all his habits.
He's still going to be a sinner after you get married?
Yes, it doesn't change. Yeah.
Number five, the average age for childbearing is now younger than the average age for marriage. So now we're completely upside down.
Got the cart in front of the horse
right. Now we're totally chewed up. By age 25, 44% of women have had a baby, while only 38% have married. Today, only 23% of all unmarried births are to teenagers. 60% are to women in their 20s. Today, the average woman bearing a child outside of marriage is a 20-something white woman with a high school degree.
I would not have expected that.
Yeah.
Right, that's a shock, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I would not have expected that.
Yeah, and what we want to say to that woman out there, that young lady out there, that white woman who has her high school degree here, is that having that child out of marriage virtually sentences that child to a life of poverty.
And it's the modern lie that's been put out there is, you know, you don't need a man. You know, if you want to be a mother, then you be a mother. You don't need a man. And I think the other part of reason, I think maybe one of the reasons why that number is high with white 20-somethings is the amount of abortions that are going on in the teenage and 20-something minority community.
Right.
I think that's probably impacts that statistic a great deal.
I'd like to offer the possibility that fathers, we talked just a few minutes ago about young ladies at 18 feeling like the culture allows them to ditch their parents. I'd like to offer the notion that most fathers think that they're free of parenting at 18. Mm-hmm. And so baby girl has to go out and go to school even though she may not want to because we have downgraded housewife, entrepreneur. We've downgraded that mother to something below getting an education. And I thought I might point out that that high stat earlier of women getting married was at 92.5% in the 1920s. You would think that that would be much lower if the issue was independent women or the women's liberation movement, because I think it was 1922 when women were allowed to vote. So if you would expect the fact that, no, the reason that they're getting married less is because women are now becoming more independent, I would say that that's not the case. I think it's a case, in many cases, of parents deciding that they no longer need to parent their daughters at 18, and they give them this idea there's an expectation that you move out. When Paul, from a biblical perspective, in 1 Corinthians 7, there's three types of women, a virgin, a married woman, or a widow. And it doesn't say that you're no longer a virgin out from underneath your father's care when you're a 40-year-old virgin woman. It talks often through 1 Corinthians 7. I thought that's strange that this is right on the heels of a 1 Corinthians 6 discussion in our previous podcast. 1 Corinthians 7, Paul says, you know, a man should allow his virgin to marry. In other words, his virgin daughter. So I don't ever see in Scripture, particularly 1 Corinthians 11, where it talks about a woman should have a covering over her head because of the angels and how her authority is upon her husband. I don't find anywhere in this epistle or anywhere else in Scripture where a woman is out from underneath the protection of a male. And so when you have dad saying, I'm not that guy anymore, well, she's going to quickly find that guy.
Right,
and
even if that guy won't marry her.
That's right.
If he'll cohabitate because he wants the goods,
right,
she'll do it.
That's right. And so I would suggest that I would be in much more of a hurry to help my son be an independent producing, and not trying to be punny here, a productive citizen in his trade, his selected direction, much quicker than I would ever expect a young lady to be independent of any protective figure in her life.
I think number six is a really good point. He says, marriage has shifted from being the cornerstone to the capstone of adult life, no longer the foundation on which young adults build their prospects for future prosperity and happiness. Marriage now comes only after they have moved toward financial and psychological independence.
Yeah, I really like that. It's almost like it's up there with retirement. Okay, mm-hmm. Now I'm set. Time to get married.
I've had my fun. I've lived my life. I've, you know, sowed my wild oats, so to speak. And now I can look at getting married.
I was looking up on Genesis 3. Your desire shall be for your husband. You know, well, if the father is not going to be the male role, she's going to find somebody to be that male.
That's right.
I mean, that is a result of the fall. But we want her to be able to kind of live independently without that.
Right.
Right. That's kind of what we want. Go off to college somewhere, and I'll call you every now and then, and I'll send you some money and keep. But, and then we're kind of shocked when she moves in with somebody, and we say, how did that happen?
Yeah, it's really hard to protect your 20-year-old daughter's virtue if she's 1,000 miles away from you while you're paying her college bill. It's very hard.
Or if she's 1,000 miles away from you while she lives under your roof.
Okay, well, talk to that. What do you mean?
Dads are terrible at being emotionally involved with their high school daughters. They're scared of it. She's a developing woman. They don't know what to do with it. And she freaks out for a week, and she's a jerk for a week because she's a woman, and so they don't know what to do with it. They think, oh, she's pushing me away. I guess I'll go away. She's pushing you away. Stay right there.
Right.
It's not rocket science. Be the adult. Love her no matter what. Or else she'll find love somewhere. I mean, I'm just saying the same thing everybody else is saying. But that's the problem. I mean, there are no... that we have in our church up in Brockton, we have 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old girls. There are no fathers or father figures for any of those girls. They're being raised by their grandmothers or their older sisters, mm-hmm, or their moms sometimes. There's no father figures, and they are highly sexualized girls. They are highly aware of what it takes to attract, and these are 11, 12, 13-year-old girls.
Yeah, you mentioned on Monday that you have 12 and 13-year-old girls with babies.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And the thing is, they've been taking care of their little sister or brother for years, so it's a natural transition just to go get their own. We don't have a lot of abortions in, I'm thinking, one particular ethnicity. I don't want to be a racist or I don't want to stereotype people, but I'm thinking one particular ethnicity in Brockton. There's not a lot of abortions because they want the babies. They want that. And they've been taking care of a baby sort of as a plaything for a few years, and now they want their own, so they go get their own. And because they think that's what's going to get them a man or get them love. It's completely broken. It's completely broken. But all I can do as a father is I can make sure that my 9-year-old daughter, as she goes through all the changes she's going to go through over the next few years, knows that she can come and sit in my lap whenever she wants, and that I just love her, no matter how frustrating she is.
The national divorce rate is almost 50% of all marriages, but for many people, the actual chances of divorce are far below 50-50. Now, this is interesting. This paragraph really caught my eye. Mm-hmm. The close to 50% divorce rate refers to the percentage of marriages entered during a particular year that are projected to end in divorce or separation before one spouse dies. Such projections assume that the divorce and death rates occurred that year will continue indefinitely into the future, an assumption that is useful more as an indicator of instability of marriage in the recent past than as a predictor of future events. So that 50-50 idea is just thrown out there. It doesn't mean that my marriage has a 50-50 chance of making it. I think that's one of the reasons why people are so scared of getting married, is because everybody's getting divorced around them, so the assumption is I'm going to end up the same way.
Yeah, I think that the point there is probably after year one, the possibility might be 50-50, but after year two, it's less, and after year three, it's less, and after year 10, it's less, and after year 15, it's less. Why? Because you've invested yourself in the marriage. The marriage has become that much stronger. So it's not a 50% chance of divorce. No, it's not. If you're married 20 years, you probably got, 5% chance of divorce. If you're married 30 years, you probably got a 2% chance of, Mm-hmm. So I think that's what he's talking about, is that 50-50 is, all right, a blanket statement, but it's not. It tells you more about the state of a marriage than it does the long term sustainability of a marriage.
I was just gonna say, I heard that if you can make it through the first year and the fifth year, you're normally set to go. If you can get through those kind of those first 5 years of marriage, your ability to get along, you've learned one another, handle situations, to be able to know what the other person's thinking, it gets a little better.
And that's what
the older you get.
That's what we should be teaching. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's helpful for. I mean, it could be helpful in some ways, depends on the context you say it in. But I'm not sure it's super helpful for a pastor of a Christian church to say, 50% of, secular marriages end in divorce, and 50% of Christian marriages end in divorce. You just kind of like. Since it just sounds hopeless, mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. this stat is a lot more helpful.
Yeah, I agree.
Stick it out for 5 years.
Right. I know that I have been guilty of saying that.
Oh, I have too. Yeah, I have too.
Haven't we all?
Yeah, right. I have too.
So I like the fact that I'm getting educated here to be more, to make them aware that you have a great probability of remaining married.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That the conditions that you've been given, this environment, finding this man, who he is, the age you're getting married at, the education you have, the culture, the church, all these things, your percentage of divorce probability
is not 50%.
And the longer you do it, the better your chances are.
Right.
And we also have this other lie that we tell kids today, the teenagers are the best years of your life. And I want to say unequivocally, no, they're not. It gets so much better. Wait, like Aaron said last night, wait till you hold your child in your arm for the very first time. Nothing is better than that. It gets so much better. Don't believe that the single thing is the way to go. When you hold a child into your arms that you helped bring into this world, it's an unbelievable feeling. It's awesome. Can't even describe it.
Right, or how about going to bed every night with somebody that you love
mm-hmm.
and who cares about you, who when you say, I have a headache, she genuinely cares about the fact that you have a headache and is concerned for your well-being, your whatever. I mean, why do we create the scenario, like you said, where the teenage years are the best and getting married is going to ruin your life? And how so?
Yeah, live it up before you get married until that ball and chain gets hooked on your
leg. I think every guy in this room whose wife has gone out of town for a little bit of time knows that some of the roughest nights of sleep are when my wife is away. And I'm supposed to be the protector. I'm the one that knows how to use the shotgun under the bed. She doesn't. But when she's away, I sleep worse than when she's there. There's just some security about her being there that makes my life better when she's there. Even if we've had a rough day, I'm still glad to know that she's there.
The percentage of children in America has declined significantly since the 60s, as measured by fertility rates and the percentage of households with children. Other indicators suggest that this decline has reduced the child-centeredness of our nation and contributed to the weakening of the institution of marriage. Of course, that's why we have people taking minivans and driving them into the ocean. It is an estimated that the mid-1800s, more than 75% of all households contained children under the age of 18. 100 years later, in the 1960s, this number has dropped slightly less than half of households. In 2011, just five decades later, only 32% of households included children. All right, now I want to compare this. Think about the number of churches that you guys know because of your in-laws in various places you go, in which there's almost no children in those churches. We go to a church every single summer. We go to a church every single Christmas time. And you look across the congregation, it's silver. And you don't have, like, our church where they're just running around and they're underneath the pews and they're in the hallway and you're like, okay, you guys need to stay over here and stop playing football in the auditorium. We think of that sometimes as a negative thing. Really, that's a great indication that we have a healthy church.
It's lively. It's neat to be here at a dinner like last night. The kids are running around everywhere.
There's life.
It's life. That's good. Life is good.
Right. But we're losing that. We're losing that in the churches in America.
What we talked about, we were trying to think about how we can get people in other people's homes, and we have a lot of curmudgeons out there say, I don't want kids into my home that they are going to mess it up. Well, of course they're going to mess it up, and you can fix it when they leave.
What's a curmudgeon?
An old grumpy person.
Off my lawn.
Okay. Yeah.
It's that guy.
Like Mr. Wilson?
Yeah, yeah, like Mr. All Wilson. Right. Not Dr. Wilson, Mr. Wilson.
Oh. Yeah. There's a distinction.
Curmudgeon. Got it.
That's a good word.
It is a great word.
That is a
good... There's one you said earlier I was going to ask you to do... to identify, but I've completely lost track.
Number nine, the final one. If a person has been to college, has an annual income over $50,000, is religious, comes from an intact family, marries after the age 25 without having a baby first, their chances of divorces are very low.
Yeah.
Very, very low. Here are some percentage point decreases at the risk of divorce or separation. I thought this was pretty interesting. And you just minus these percentages, I guess. Annual income over 50 versus under 25, it's 30% less chance. Mm-hmm. Having a baby 7 months or more after marriage versus before marriage, minus 24%. Where's Brian at? He had to leave, didn't he? Is he past 7 months? He should be getting pretty close.
It's getting close to that.
Okay. They were married over
July. It was summer last year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Marrying over 25 years versus under 18, minus 24. You're the exception, Bill.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How old were you? I was 22. It says marrying over 25, being over 25 years of age when you get married versus under 18.
Right. I was thinking about what he said with his magic number of 17. Okay. But yes, I guess I was married when I was 24.
I think they probably have to pick a figure somewhere because we've got it's over 25 and under 18. Well, they just left out 7 years.
Right.
So I think we would say, well, you don't have to wait till you're 25. But I think for the sake of their statistics, they had to pick a number. Yeah. Right.
But it's not.
And that's still 4 years younger than the median age of what we're talking about in the world. So, but I think what they say is rather than. It ties into the education as well. If you got education, you're going to make more money. Hence, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the college thing, and they have the religious affiliation versus none, minus 14 points. So the point of the final paragraph is We should not be in the church saying 50% of all marriages in this church end in divorce.
And the family of origin being intact, is, you know, rather than divorced parents. That's what, if you model what a marriage is supposed to look like, your kids are more likely to have a good marriage. If you show them what marriage is supposed to be, a Christ-centered marriage, they're going to understand what marriage is. Whereas if you've been divorced three times, don't be shocked when your kid does the exact same thing.
Kids don't do what you say, they become who you are.
Exactly.
And this solidifies that living biblically is a good thing.
Of course it does.
And that's what it says. If you're religious, so what if you're an atheist? Well, you have no moral center, so you can do what you want.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
So these are people who have a moral center, they're religious, they're educated, they're smart, intelligent people, they have good jobs, they work hard, and they make it. And what it says is that the people who don't do these things are more likely, as you said over and over again, are more likely to end up in poverty, divorce, all sorts of other bad things happening because they don't follow the biblical plan of get married, be educate yourself, and have kids.
And doesn't it? I think it comes back again, falling on the shoulder of the men, is that men need to be men. And what Steve was saying, why do we have girls that are chasing after these dirt bags? Because dad's not doing what he's supposed to do. Yeah. Why do we have the dirt bags? Because dad was a dirt bag, and he showed you how to act that way.
I used to joke that I wanted my girls to turn out ugly. I figured it was just,
I've said that joke before too. If I ever had one,
keeps the boy. But then I
means they can cook.
I told all of the ladies who would really didn't appreciate my kind of humor. Yeah. I told them instead I'm just going to pray that God gives me the grace to just love my girls so well that they don't need to go find it somewhere else.
Well, we do want them to find it eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I keep on telling all you guys out there that have these girls that you're raising. You know, the reason you're raising such godly girls is so they do get married and have children.
And they raise godly children.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking about the 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the 15-year-old girl.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, but at some point, we want them getting married. And we want to celebrate it. We want to make a big deal of it. I mean, we're going to attend that wedding. Not only are we going to attend that wedding, we're going to dress up and go to that wedding. Mm. Why? Because it's a big deal.
Yeah, walk down the aisle with her.
Not showing up with my flip-flops. You know, this is a big deal. This is a special day in the life of the church. And we've lost that.
Yeah, it's something your kids are excited, your little girl's excited about, and your son is excited about going, because one day he's going to get to do that. It's not a burdensome thing that you have to do on Saturday. Right, and if you want to catch the garter, that's great.
And we need to create a scenario where we do it under the umbrella of the church.
The single guy gets to catch it. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, under the umbrella of the church. Yeah.
I think we lost something there in the last minute that we don't want to lose. But for the joy of a joint conversation, that's the way things go sometimes.
It's not Dave's fault normally.
Right.
What? Maybe this time.
Where's the bald guy?
I just, you think about the church that you're in. When was the last time somebody got married? When was the last time somebody got married?
Yeah, we talked about it with the state of the country is without the kids, you're not going to have a future, and you can very well make that a microcosm with the church. I mean, if there's no kids, don't expect that church to be there. If it, like you said, if you have silver hair and that's it, that church isn't long for the world.
Well, again, it's what's legal and what do I desire? Yeah. I mean, you have I had a brother and come up last night after service and said, "Now, what if I can finance my own trip to?" And he named a mission field. Do I still need the church's permission to go? I said, well, of course, legally you don't. If you want our help in any way, of course, you might want to think about, we're going to pray for you either way, brother, so on and so forth. I said, but really, it's an issue of what you believe the Bible teaches about the church. If you think that it's optional, if you think it's one of the plans, if you think it's one of the groups of people, then go on without our blessing and feel free. But I don't care if you can finance everything. You, I think, should want your brothers and sisters in Christ to put their hands on you and send you out with their blessing. And I think it's the same way the marriage. Is it the church just a building? No, of course not. Is the church building sacred? Well, in a way, in a sense, yes. But being in a church facility, being with church people, is it required by law? No. But it says something about what you think about your church. And
does my church have any authority in my life?
And yeah. the commitment that you're making, and who you're making the commitment
that's
to.
That's what a guy who says I can find finance my own trip that limits accountability, I think.
Right. Right. It's not what is required. It's what do I desire?
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the difference, Bill, when I'll just baptize you in my bathtub at home?
Sure.
It's the same same idea.
Right. I
mean, you know, it says that this entity that Christ died for, it doesn't really have an authority in anyone's life. And so I get married at the playground, I get married at the park, I get married in the backyard.
Beach, you know, there's just a number of places.
Just anything, and I get any Tom, Dick, or Harry to marry me.
Right.
And it's not important that my pastor marries me, you know, and those kind of things. We've lost that.
Right, and I think it comes back to the leaning that we have towards that antinomianism, that anti-law thing, where I'm free in Christ to do what I want, and so unless I have a verse that says I must, I'm not going to.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's where we're at. Thanks for listening. 9 points. I didn't give credit to the author. I wanted to see David. Was there a particular
Carter? Sorry, Joe Carter.
Joe Carter.
Oh wow, he's taking up a
Joe Carter. So this is where the 9 points came from. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.